سفر بریز پیشم بی خبر اسیر روی هم میشم دوباره باز تنها میشم میشه بگم پیشم بمونه به بادگان تا صبح بخونه بخونه از دیار یاری چرا میری تنها میذاری اگه فراموشم کنی ترک آغوشم کنی پرنده ای دریام میشم.
You're listening to Intersections Radio, the podcast where we geek out on all things intersectionality. I'm your host, Sarika Mehta. Welcome and thanks for tuning in. Now, normally Stage and Studio with Dime Roberts airs at this time, but right now Dime is on a brief hiatus and I will keep you all in suspense for what that is. But don't worry, we are still here to fulfill your cultural artistic needs with this crossover episode. So today is a special live in studio episode. I'm chatting with three wonderful guests. We have Subhashini Ganeshan and Amna Khan and Kathleen Mulligan. Subhashini and Amna Khan are Bharatanatyam dancers from very different walks of life, actually. And Kathleen Mulligan is the executive producer of On Common Ground, which is now playing at the Artist Repertory Theater. Suba is the founder and director of New Expressive Works and the artistic director of the Classical Indian Dance School here in Portland, the Natya Lila Academy. And Amna Khan is also a professional Bharatanatyam dancer and a member of Theatre Wale from Islamabad, Pakistan. She joins us as part of the collaborative effort, which I was just describing, On Common Ground, between Portland's Artist Repertory Theatre and Theatre Wale. And Kathleen Mulligan is the executive producer of On Common Ground. She actually joins us from Ithaca College, where she is a professor of voice and speech theater. Now, last night was the opening night of On Common Ground, which you can still catch on Wednesday night at Artist Repertory Theater. And then it's off to Ashland for these folks at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And tonight is also a special event hosted by New Expressive Works, a lecture and demonstration by Amna Khan. And we have so much to talk about, so we're going to jump right in. And by the way, for those who are often on Facebook, as we all are, let's admit it, you can check us out on the Facebook live stream at KBOO Radio. This is Intersections Radio. Welcome to Intersections Radio, Suba, Amna, and Kathleen.
Thank you.
First, I want to talk about Bharatanatyam dancing as a background, since that's what brings at least two of our guests here and this entire project. Maybe Suba, let's start with you. From what I understand, which I will admit is very a little bit of knowledge about this form, it's a classical form, it's an ancient form, and my understanding is that it's kind of strict and rigid in nature, much like classical ballet, for example. And you've been training for a very long time, for most of your life, and you teach here in Portland. So talk a little bit about your experience in your life in this form.
Bharatanatyam, for those who don't know it, it's a word, it's really a mathematical equation, ba for emotions or feelings, ra for music, ta for tala, which is rhythm, and natyam is dance and storytelling put together. So you combine emotion, music, and rhythm, and you get our dance storytelling form. I've been studying this form since I was 4.5 years old. I studied it in Singapore, and my teachers came from India. They have influence both from Kerala and from Tamil Nadu. And Tamil Nadu is where the dance form is considered to have originated, mm-hmm. with a background about 2,000 years old from the book Natya Shastra. We're kind of an OCD kind of community. So we write things, we work with things. So, but it is an evolution. The form that you see right now that stems out of South India is only about 400 years old, 400 to 500 years old. And that is the form that I primarily practice and I've studied. And after doing it for about 37 years, I've begun to do more contemporary work and connect it to other ways of looking at universal emotions rather than the typical or what you would say the rigorous traditional form, which is talking about gods and goddesses that are primarily from the Hindu pantheon.
Hindu mythology,
yeah,
right.
Exactly. So is that a good summary?
Oh, yeah. I think if we were going to give a, you know, one paragraph summary of something ancient and 400 something years old, that's a very good summary. Maybe talk about how you've been able to interpret it into more contemporary forms since, My understanding was always it was such a classical and rigid form based on Hindu mythology.
Right. I mean, I always say that I'm grateful for everybody who does the traditional form in a traditional way so that I can go and be a contemporary dancer. So the form is can be considered rigid and very traditional because there is a format to the way a dance recital happens. Everybody knows it. It's sort of this backstory. And the stories are all, like we said, about gods and goddesses and stories from epics like the Ramayana or the Mahabharata. My contemporary rendition of it is not that, I mean, miraculous. It's just taking these ideas of rasas, which are very important. These are emotions that we really get into the meat of in the art form and make it more universal. So I'm speaking mostly to an American audience at the moment. So if I'm going to tell you how Sita felt when Rama met her for the first time, it doesn't really make that much sense. But we can talk about love, we can talk about anger, we can talk about sorrow, we can talk about this idea of loneliness, all of which are universal. And so my real work has been in the last 5 years to mine these universal emotions. So making it a little bit more abstract, but more welcoming to all our emotional selves.
Absolutely. That is definitely a way to connect these old epic stories to our modern lives. And that brings us to you, Amna, who joins us from Islamabad. So first of all, welcome to Portland.
Thank you so much.
And your story is a little bit different because you've also been training for a very long time, but your art form manifests in Pakistan. Talk about your beginnings in this art form and what brought you to the professional level.
So, as you know, in Pakistan, there are not many dancers who take it as a profession. Mm-hmm. And if they are professional, then they're Kathak dancers mostly, which is similar to the North Indian style, which is a classical style. But there's like two Bharatanatyam teachers in Pakistan, one being my guru. Her name is Indu Mitta, and she's now 89 years old, almost. So, I mean...
So two teachers for the whole country.
For the whole country.
And one of whom is 89 years
old. Yeah, and one lives on one end of the country, and the other lives... So, it was an interesting start, and what Subha is talking about, I guess our intersectionality here is very interesting because my teacher, she learned from Rukmini Devi, who was one of the pioneers of, you know, bringing it back after the British banned it in the South. So Rukmini Devi, she started Kalakshetra, which is like the Bolshoi theater, kind of, something like that, to draw a parallel.
That's a good parallel.
so she was a teacher. She studied from the pioneer students, which means like she learned that style from back in the maybe 50s she learned. And what she has been teaching us in Pakistan, because it's pretty taboo to dance a Hindu dance there, right?
Because
So basically she did what Subha is doing here, and she's kind of made our style less Hinduized and more, I mean, in a secular way. She always says, I want it to be about people. I don't want it to be about gods. I want it to be about things that people will relate to. So I watched a performance of a Kathak dancer when I was 10 years old, and my mom was just like, oh yeah, you should do this. And you know, basically a lot of girls at that time were sent to dance class, but it was like a way of becoming graceful, right? So you can get a good proposal and you can be like...
We call it the MRS degree.
So
also a good parallel, but I mean, unfortunately.
So I would hear my dance teacher say stuff like, oh yeah, none of my students ever even took this seriously. People just come get it on their CVs, say I'm a dancer, la la la. But they don't really practice it professionally because it's really hard. So I think that was the thing. It wasn't even that I was so into the dance. It was more my love for my teacher and just in awe of how she's had such a crazy life. And then with the process, in the process of learning things and unlearning things with her, the dance form took over. I mean, I would say that very happily that I'm a professional dancer there. But of course, back there when I say it, it's like, okay, people are not so, yeah.
Actually, that brings me to my next question. The kind of support you... I was curious about the kind of support you've received as a professional dancer, as a professional artist, mm-hmm. for what is traditionally a Hindu dance form in Pakistan. I mean, there's a lot of layers as to why this is complicated.
Yeah.
Many of which you described for us.
I mean, in Pakistan, I feel like there's so many different layers of society everywhere, actually. Mm-hmm. But with the whole, I mean, after the Zia regime, things are super, so, you know, Islamized, or not even Islamized, it's just more patriarchal, I feel. So as a woman dancing, it's especially if it's out of an elitist or a so-called cultured place, it's totally seen as something close to, you know, prostitution or something. So, I mean, it's hard, and especially my father's family, their army background, and
oh wow.
Considering the fact that I'm also a progressive political activist, there's a problem.
Which we'll
with
get
that.
To in a moment.
So, with the dance and that, there's been a bit of a tussle at home, but I think now they've just realized that, okay, she's mad, so they've let me go. Yeah, and I think they like it, because my dad never misses a show. Even though he'll be right at the end, he won't be there, but he'll watch, and then he'll be like, you're getting better, or he'll give me some tips, and I'll be like, yeah, okay, thanks.
Oh, but I love that. I love that he's feigning, yeah. you know, his love for what you're doing. I mean, I think that's just, I wonder if that's the way he can show it.
Yeah.
Let me tell you how to do this better. Well, this is incredible. And you had talked a little bit earlier about your teacher, your guru, making this more of a secularized form. Can mm-hmm. you give us some examples?
Yeah, for example, I mean, the same example I gave about the loss of a lover, the loss between Shiv and Parvati, right? Mm-hmm. So she will put, my teacher, what she does is, what she has choreographed are things about, like, what I'll be performing tonight, Dukhi, which means I'm upset. And of course, she's also translated most of the things that are in Tamil into Urdu. So our gestures, things that Subha will say correctly in the traditional form, I will say, I don't know what that means, because I know the Urdu term for
it. So something like this would be Alapatman?
Khela phool. What would you call it in English?
Lotus flower.
So yeah. There, for those who are listening and not viewing, our two dancers are making a hand gesture, kind of like a, like if you take your five fingers and bend.
It's like holding a grapefruit.
Like holding a grapefruit. Thank you, Subha.
A really big grapefruit.
And that means, in English it means lotus, and in Tamil it was...
It's actually Sanskrit, okay. Alapatmam. Oh, yeah, Alapatmam. And in Urdu it was...
It's Khilaphool. So she's kind of tweaked it by calling it a full flower in full bloom. Yeah. So she also says this, that, I mean, these terms are still in Sanskrit, and it's not, she calls it a dead language. She says that people don't really speak Sanskrit, so why don't we bring it into what the people speak? Mm-hmm. So that's why she spent years of her life just like writing down stuff like, regarding the dance form, regarding the theory, trying to make it in a way secularized it. So, you know, things like anger or wrath, there'll be dances about, you know, betrayed lovers. You won't say anyone's name, the god's name or the goddess's name, but it'll be in Urdu, Ghazal.
Okay.
So, or not Ghazal, actually, Urdu, North Indian rag, right? So the traditional things like, oh, you have left me. Won't say who has left who, but it's very abstract. Things like that.
That brings up a couple of points. The music that is accompanying the dancers, in the traditional form or in the contemporary form, what is the music that is used, and versus the, apparently ghazals are used when in the form that you're practicing?
Tumri, not really ghazals. Okay. Miss Mitha, my guru, hates ghazals. Okay. I don't mind them, but yeah, she says that it's not so pakka, it's not so classical. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. So if you want to do something contemporary to it, you could.
Okay.
But it's just not seen as a, you know, it's not accepted.
Yeah. paka, like really paka, like authentic, like
yes, that authentic
rock, you know.
So things that are in the beats of the South Indian in the Carnatic style, things that would be seven beats. Mm-hmm. We'd use something that is seven beats, like
How does it sound? Because in Bharatanatyam, it'll sound like takkitta, takkadhimi, takkitta, takkadhimi.
So we don't have a mridangam player in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we use a tabla. And the tabla or pakhavaj, but actually the only living pakhavaj player is now not living. So there's no more pakhavaj in Pakistan.
Oh.
I mean, it's quite, but there is a tabla player who plays the pakhavaj for us, but he identifies more with the tabla. So in the tabla beat, it's the term for it is, I mean, something like din din da da din din na na ka ta ta.
Yeah.
So it's seven beats, but so we'll use the tabla but dance the Bharatanatyam style.
Yeah.
And this is excellent. For our audience who is, again, not viewing, we need to see these two dancers giving us more collaborative performances together.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for explaining all of that. And that kind of brings us to what brought Amna here was, you know, what Kathleen Mulligan is the executive producer of, On Common Ground. And last night was the opening night. Mm-hmm. From what I understand, a full house, sold out production. Congratulations. How did that go? I mean, how did you feel about it?
I was absolutely delighted. I mean, you know, the group arrived here on the 23rd, after about 40 hours of travel from Pakistan. And the next morning we said, okay, we have time for rehearsal. I had been in Pakistan 10 days before, doing some last minute rehearsals with them and also some vocal work with them. And then we got here. My husband is the director of the project. So we had 2 days to for him to do some last minute directing and then for us to go into tech. And we teched the whole show, which anyone who is not in theater, that's when you add the lights and sound and costumes and every other technical element. Usually that takes about a week. We did it in 3 hours.
You were on a fast-track timeline.
We were on a fast track, and we had a lighting designer who was amazing, but who had never seen the show before, so he's sort of designing as he goes. And our sound designer, but working, his name is Mustafa Hassan, and he's from Islamabad, has been with the show since we started, but this was working with new technology and working in a theater he's never worked in before. And he's also 19 years old and and has learned most of what he's learned on the job. Mm-hmm. And but it went amazingly well. The audience was very responsive, very warm and welcoming, and mm-hmm. seemed to really enjoy it. And so we couldn't have been happier.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell us about On Common Ground and how this and the conception of the idea.
Well, my husband David and I had worked with Theatrevali several years ago on a project called Voices of Partition, where we interviewed survivors of the partition of 1947 and between Pakistan and India, and then we created an original theater piece out of that, and that toured to the U.S. And then actually the embassy came to us. They had funded the last piece, Voices of Partition, and they said, we are really interested in supporting your theater, and do you have another idea? And by then my husband and I had been talking to Linda Alper, who is an artist's rep resident actress, about collaborating on a project, and she had worked some with Theatrevali, so we all got together and tried to figure out what would be a good stepping off point for a new project. And one of our company members, Amar Khalid, who is actually the associate artistic director of Theatrevali, he started talking about public space. This was not long after the Peshawar attack on the school in Peshawar, and that was on all of our minds, and also the attack on the amusement park or playground in Lahore. And just the idea of examining public space and the loss of it, the need for it, and what it means in both of our countries and how violence and other influences have affected our ability to gather in public spaces and how that affects community.
Right. I remember those events as well, at least in the news. That's what I understood was that this is a collaborative effort, that we were bringing one theater company here, and mm-hmm. I thought that the second half was, which I think is now the first half. So the first half was Voices of Partition, in which
Voices of Partition was a separate project. Yeah, but my first collaboration and my husband David Studwell's first collaboration with Theater Volley.
Okay. Yeah. So then after this component, after the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and these productions are over, then do artists go with Theater Valley back to Pakistan? Or?
No, actually the sort of U.S. component of this mm-hmm. project will be over on July 6th when we finish at Oregon Shakespeare. Then the company goes back to Pakistan. They will translate what we have into Urdu.
See.
And reconfigure. This project is really for an American mm. audience. They are going to reimagine that for a Pakistani audience, and part of the grant pays for them to tour to Peshawar, Karachi, Lahore, and Islamabad, and also lead workshops for university students, writing workshops. Mm-hmm. The whole idea of writing dramatic material from your own experiences, from your family experiences. Hmm. So that's the rest of the project and a huge next step of the project.
Oh, absolutely. That sounds really exciting. Just based on your experiences here, Amna, what do you foresee for that component?
For the component in
returning back to Islamabad,
I'm really excited about it because there are certain things. I mean, we had a lot of Pakistani audience coming by while we were rehearsing, friends obviously who would just come by and family, and they would say stuff like, "Hey, why don't you discuss this?" And I was like, "Because this is written for an American audience." And when we go back there, it'll be actually harder because this is basically people's personal lives, just acted out in front of others who don't know it. And that's the interesting part. But the trick is, how do you make it interesting for people who know that society? And I think that would make it really beautiful also, because then it's more personalized. And I mean, then people can relate to it in different ways and see society in different ways that one would not otherwise see it like. So to empathize and to bring intersectionality.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Especially the empathy component. Were there, maybe that's for tonight's event in which you're giving a lecture and demonstration again at New Expressive Works, which, by the way, is a free event, but you do have to RSVP to SUBA. That's correct, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
just because it's an intimate space and we like to know how many people are coming, not for any other reason.
Sure. I'm just curious, was there any Q&A or any kind of audience response after the show last night?
In an informal way.
Mm-hmm. We have a couple of interns from Oregon, from Ithaca College. One is a videographer, and she was interviewing some of the audience members last night just to get their responses.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the responses?
I haven't heard them, but she came up to me after and said that they were amazing and people. Yeah. And then we're staying at the Northwest Hostel over on 18th and Gleason, which is an amazing place, mm-hmm. by the way. Mm-hmm. And the woman who runs the cafe said, all these people were streaming in after your show and raving about it. And mm-hmm. so that was really great. Nice to hear. Yeah.
Okay, so folks should make sure to see the show tomorrow. Nicole Lane is in studio with us. There are tickets left, yes? No, there are no tickets. Okay.
Waiting list and
okay,
but don't come. We'll try to get you in.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But this is a very exciting production and collaboration. This is really incredible that you've come all the way to Portland with the group. And tonight is kind of a unique event. It's, as I mentioned, it's a lecture and demonstration with Amna Khan.
We just want to say one more thing, though. after our conversation yesterday, we will have the musicians and the singer as part of the event tonight, which we didn't expect. So,
Great. I was actually going to ask, what do you have in store for tonight?
Well, what I have in store for tonight is this, not for me, I mean, I don't, but the musicians will be presenting something and I will perhaps jam with them in what we call jugalbandi, which is like back and forth. And then I would be performing a traditional Bharatanatyam piece called Alarepu, which basically, as we've been taught, it invokes the spirit of dance. So that's how she secularized it there also. Rather than invoking or doing a Pushpanjali, which is traditionally like as an offering to
a particular god.
So this is just to the spirit of dance. And then we'll be performing what's it called? A varnam called Dukhi, which is about a woman who has lost, or not even lost. I mean, sometimes it's done in a different mood. Sometimes it's just, sometimes it can be light. She can just call her lover who's down the street. Or sometimes she can be missing someone who's passed away in a really tragic way. Sometimes it's like that.
Right.
I don't know.
Just like real life.
Yeah. And then, and really interesting, and one of my favorite pieces is because maybe I've also choreographed it with my teacher, is it's based on a feminist poem called Hum Gunagar Aurate, which means we sinful women, in a very sarcastic tone. And it's a jab at the Maulvis, the mullahs, and the authority, the army, the man who's the patriarch. So it's a jab at that, and it's talking about why, I mean, in Urdu we say dheet, which means someone who's so stubborn, you know, that they'll keep at it. And they'll keep at it, and they'll keep at it. So it's about that.
We are unfortunately out of time, but I think that was a fantastic way to end our program. Suba Ganeshan, Amna Khan, and Kathleen Mulligan, thank you all
thank
so much
for
joining
for
me on
us.
Intersections Radio. You can see and hear and learn more from Amna Khan tonight at New Expressive Works, located at 810 Southeast Belmont here in Portland. And you can catch one more night of On Common Ground at the Artist Repertory Theater if you get on a waiting list, perhaps maybe, at 1515 Southwest Morrison on Wednesday. And after that, the artists are off to Ashland at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And to listen to a podcast of this interview, check out intersectionsradio.wordpress.com. Visit the same website for previous episodes of this podcast and join the Facebook community at facebook.com/intersectionsradio. You're listening to Intersections Radio, and this program airs locally on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Sarika Mehta. Thanks for listening. They did